I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Greetings and salutations, mortals. This is the Blizzard Watch Podcast, and I am your host, and I'm also a mortal. I've always thought that was weird, if you'll call the people mortals. It's like, yeah, so you can die, you get killed later on in the fight, you're immortal. But anyway, hi, I'm Matt. With me this week is Joe, the co-host. As far as I know, Joe is mortal. If he's not, he's been polite enough not to talk about it too much. I hate it when people constantly tell me that they can't die. Great, but in, why don't you? But anyway, this week, you guys know that patch 9.1 dropped. A lot of stuff is happening. We did a lore watch this weekend, kind of talking about a ton of it. I don't think we're going to go back and belabor that just yet. We're going to let things simmer a bit for a while. The race for world first is going on as we speak in Mythic Sanctum of Domination. There's a lot of stuff happening, so we're going to let that kind of go on, and we're going to just skip straight to you guys' questions because you sent in a ton of them this week. We've got a lot of stuff to go over. We really appreciate it. We got stuff from our Discord. We got emails. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff to look at. We're going to cover it. I did steal one question from Lorewatch that straight up said Lorewatch in it because, A, it was something we kind of talked about this weekend, and B, we've been doing a lot of raid-focused Lorewatches. And by the way, if you have not been listening to Go Amazing Show, Joe does... Since we've been doing the raid-focused ones, and we're probably going to go back to doing some more of those, it does mean that we haven't been able to do as many questions. And so I wanted to get this question answered. So it's in here, too. But yeah, Joe's going to read them for us, so if you don't mind, Joe. Oh, wait, I have to tell you where to send them.
That's right.
I'm a little up tonight. It's been a weird day. Anyway, if you have a question for the podcast, you can send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for this show. Or you can go to our Discord and go to the Patron Q and Podcast Questions channel if you're a patron, and we look there first because that's a perk for being a patron. If you want to support us, by the way, Patreon, totally, we would love that. But if you're not a patron but you still want to ask us questions, we also have the Q Questions channel. There's two channels on our Discord you can use, or you can email us. Or, I mean, if you really want to, you can use Twitter. But I got to be honest, I'm terrible about looking at stuff on my Twitter. I constantly forget. But you can do that. You can at Blizzard Watch, and they'll probably be forwarded to us. Or you can at me and Joe directly. So that's another way if you want to try and do it that way. Or you can even, if you go to our Discord, you can directly add us there as well.
Yep.
People have done that, right?
Yeah, people have absolutely done that. No, I was having a conversation in our supporter chat last night and today. So, you know, thank you.
Yeah. So you can do that too. There's lots of ways to get questions to us, and we love having them. So feel free to do that. But right now, Joe's going to read them for us, so if you don't mind, Joe.
Not at all. First question. Dear Watchers, what do you think is the mentality of intelligent undead who want everyone to be uniformly dead? For example, Arthas, Kel'Thuzad, Sylvanas, etc. Is there an overarching reasoning to this? Some sort of cosmic logic of we will all be one under the banner of death. What are your thoughts on characters such as these and their overarching motives? Thank you for your time, Rickles. It's varied. It's super varied.
I was just going to say, I don't even know if Sylvanas falls under that rubric.
I don't know either, because I don't know what her end goal was.
And it feels like what Sylvanas wanted was to completely remake the cosmos. Like, her goal wasn't just to make everybody dead. It was to make life itself something else.
Something where they couldn't be taken away, because, I mean, that was kind of like her motivation, right? Like, all of her potential was taken away. All of the potential of life in its weirdness was taken away from her and other folks. Like, that was sort of her driving thing for a very long time. So maybe it's not necessarily make everybody universally or unilaterally dead. Maybe it's find a way that they don't have to, that death doesn't have to exist. So,
yeah, Arthas seemed to think that it would be better for everything on Azeroth to be part of the Scourge, and thus it would survive the Legion no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't be alive, but it would continue. There would be a continuation under his rule. That seemed to be where he was going. Kel'Thuzad, I would also not argue that Kel'Thuzad necessarily wants everything to be dead.
I think he wanted
he wanted personal power. He liked necromancy, and it was a forbidden art that he wanted to master just because he could. Because people forget this. Kel'Thuzad was an incredibly skilled wizard. He was so good that at a very early age, he got on the Council of Six.
Yep.
And he felt like he'd done everything he could do with the magic that he had, and he wanted this new magic that nobody else on the Council was studying, because they'd expressly forbidden it. And he was like, no, why? This is just more different kind of power. Why shouldn't we use it? Why shouldn't I use it? I don't think he necessarily cares if people are dead or not. Like, sure, he's fine with it, and he's fine with, like, ruling over the dead, but he's just as fine being the only lich in town if it suits his purposes. So I would argue that there's not necessarily a correlation between these characters. Kel'Thuzad does a lot of stuff that he does because he wants personal power, or because somebody far more powerful than him is telling him to do them.
Yeah, and I think that's one of I don't want to say, like, the good things, but the interesting things about Warcraft in general is that death means something different for everybody. And their motivations therein are always wildly different, which makes sense. It's not always the same. It's not the samey type thing. In stories where some of the villains do want everybody to become dead like them, which is sort of like a classic trope of fantasy storytelling that we've seen repeatedly. It tends to be from a root of them being outcasts from the very beginning. And because they're outcasts, now they want to make everybody equally outcast because, well, if I have to suffer, everybody needs to suffer. Everybody should be on the same footing. Like, we see that a lot too. So it's always tricky. And some of it is just they don't want the living to exist anymore. I'm trying to think of the best comparison I can really give. It is not a WoW one, but I'll go to Warhammer for this, just because way back in ye olden days, there was this character called Nagash. Who's since become the god of the land of dead. But before that, he was just a really powerful lich. And he wanted the living to die because the living kept killing all of the dead. So he had his own power base. He had his own army. He had a whole bunch of things under his... He basically had a whole society of, like, skeletons and undead that were their own kingdom. And they constantly fought. And eventually the living were like, no, we're just going to go wipe them out. They're monsters. Let's go take care of it. So there was this whole pushback where it's like, okay, well, you want to kill us. I guess we're going to go to war then. And so he wanted them to die, not because he wanted them to be like him, but because it's like, they wouldn't leave me the heck alone. And you see that sometimes. It's evolved since, and that's the more simplistic version of, like, how he was back in, like, the 90s. But you see that too, where it's like, okay, well, the living did something really, really dumb and really set off this particular undead culture, and now they're coming to get us. So, I mean,
And that's actually sort of reflected in a lot of the Forsaken, where...
It is.
Putris is a good example. Putris, I mean, hated the Scourge, absolutely, but also hated the living. You know, he hated the living for constantly, you know, not really trusting or respecting the Forsaken, or even in the case of the Alliance, trying to wipe them out. and he hated the Scourge for having made them undead in the first place. Because they didn't want to be... The Forsaken don't want to be Forsaken. They are, just don't have any choice. I mean, it's be completely dead or be this. And if you know, the only choice you have, if they you take it. But I always liked Putress. Like, I kind of was sad that he went away as fast as he did. Because it was just such an interesting... That moment, the Wrathgate moment, really crystallized his character for me. Where he's, when he's up there and he screams, "Did you think we had forgotten?
Mm-hmm.
Did you think we had forgiven?" And it's like that concept of, you know, you've pushed us to this. You turned us into this. You wouldn't accept us. Now we're going to get all of you.
And that continues, right? Like, that's not even that. Yeah. And it's continued even recently. You see it with Battle for Azeroth definitely has a lot of that, especially with why can't I think of his name? The mage, the tide sage that became undead.
Oh, yeah, I know the guy you're talking about. Yeah,
but like,
I don't remember his name.
He wanted to go back to his family, but he couldn't do that because, well, they would never accept him in that state. So, yeah, so like, you can even look at one of the recent books. Like, look at Before the Storm, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at how the Forsaken were treated. Look at how all that sort of went on. And look at what happened with trying to arrange for even families to go meet with their Forsaken counterparts. How many of them turned it down? How many were rejected? That was a whole big thing of these Forsaken who were feeling sad and rejected and like they were basically thrown into the trash because they're alive. They're still here. They still remember who they were and they wanted to go see their family. And their family wouldn't want to do anything with them because they're undead. Doesn't matter that they're still alive, quote unquote. They've moved on. And that's got to be hurtful. Like, imagine if you were in a place where your loved ones didn't want to see you because of something that happened to get, like, out of your control. And how that would just, how would that weigh on you? And so that's a huge part, I think, of some of their motivation. It's not necessarily that they're just mad at the living. It's, you know, they're just hurt. You know, sometimes it's just, it's that level of pain that sort of brings it all in.
Hi, everybody. Hopefully we should be back. Hopefully that has fixed it. And we apologize. This is the ups and downs of doing this thing live instead of recorded. If we'd done it recorded, you wouldn't hear any of it. But on the other hand, you wouldn't hear our weird stories. So there you go.
Also true. So we're trying a little something different. And hopefully this will work out a little bit better. But yeah, so right. I think we're done with that question. Unless there's anything else you wanted to add and we can move on to the next one.
No, I'm fine.
All right, so this next one comes from Granite Dad. Question for the Blizzard Watch podcast, or the queue if preferred. Is it time to retire fear mechanics from random mobs? I'm thinking about it because I've been playing a lot of Fallout 76, and there's a boss mob there that casts a fear that I find very frustrating. Then I logged back in and got feared by some random mob in Corthia / the Maw. And I ran into about 3 other mobs while feared and died. Any encounter with an NPC where you have 0 player control with no recourse is needlessly punishing in my book. I don't mind interrupts or PvP fears as much. It just baffles me that this is considered good gameplay when I want to throw my keyboard across the room in frustration. I mean, not gonna lie, you're not alone. I mean, Matt and I talk about loss of player control as a thing pretty regularly, actually. Yeah. And how we don't like it. But also, MMOs are in a weird spot, right? Like, fear is a mechanic. It's been around for a long time. My gripe, I think, personally, isn't so much that it happens. It's the length of time that it happens. Like, I was just doing the Terror Groove fight in Sanctum, and I was doing it on my Hunter. Because I don't raid on my Hunter, and I just want to do that and get some cool stuff because the bows are nice and things like that, whatever. So I'm doing it at LFR, and I notice that, like, the fear lasts for, like, 16 seconds if you get hit. I know it's slightly less than that, but it feels like forever. That's an eternity. Like, a 1, 2, or 3 second fear, yeah, I can deal with that. But anything that makes you run for that long and cause that much trouble, yeah, like, it's getting old real quick.
Yeah, I honestly think that any fear past 6 seconds, I think, shouldn't even exist. That 6 seconds in World of Warcraft is a very long time to not be able to control your character. I straight up would never allow a fear to go beyond 6 seconds. If I'm sure there are reasons, I'm sure there are game devs out there right now who could come in and explain why they do it and why it's actually good. But I, you know, this is just personally a reaction. I really hate it.
Yeah, it's I play a warrior, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I play a warrior. So I've got ways around it. I can, you know, I can break it. if I really want to. I can berserk a rage and get out of it.
I used to be able to. I can't do it anymore because they changed the way my mechanic for breaking that works.
They don't Tremor Totem anymore?
Tremor Totem has to be done before the fear goes off. You cannot do it in the middle of it anymore. Which, I'm going to throw out there, this is going to be my gripe, and if there are any devs listening, please bring that back to PvE. Please, for the love of all things that are WoW-related, let Tremor Totem be cast while you are CC'd or feared during PvE. If you want to keep it like it is for PvP, fine, I get it. But holy heck, it makes that totem virtually useless in a PvE setting.
You need to basically you'd need to have a really clear call that this is coming to use it, and that's bad. I don't like that. But in general, I do think that I also think your point about, you know, fear on random mobs is a decent one to point out. It's one thing that a boss has a fear mechanic. You should be afraid of bosses at least a little bit. It makes sense in the story of the game that this gigantic behemoth or this incredibly powerful lich or this, you know, arcane master or what have you would be a little daunting, and it could focus itself on you and you'd be afraid. But random monster number 72 that's just out there in the world, I feel like too many of them have fear. I'll be upfront with you. It's like, why am I afraid of that thing? And this goes back to one of my absolute favorite cartoons about World of Warcraft of all time, which came out in like 2005, this cartoon came. And it was, you know, an undead character in the Plague Lands running. The undead, he's fighting Scourge. The Scourge casts fear on him. He goes, "Oh my God! It's the Walking Dead! Run, 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 run! Wait a minute!" You know, he's like running. Then it's like, "Oh, wait, hold on! Why am I afraid of him again? I'm the Walking Dead. Wait, you know," and that kind of thing. It's like my practically 8 foot tall, you know, Tauren clad in armor wrought from god flesh and carrying a sword the size of a bus is afraid of a bear.
Well, let's
you know,
I mean, let's take it even a step further. At this point, we are the Maw Walker, we are the champions and all this good stuff, and it's like we've seen some stuff, folks. We're not exactly unseasoned. So like this random soul in the Maw going boo and us running away for 10 seconds, yeah, that feels a little off-putting. Right.
Yeah, it's one thing if the jailer himself screams at me. Okay, maybe I'd be scared.
Even the terror group. Okay, I can understand that. That thing's a massive behemoth. Yeah. Okay, sure, makes sense. Hell yeah. Okay, fine. Whatever. She's a big weird tentacly monster thing. 100%. Okay, got it. Random soul guy that's smaller than me and doesn't even have a full body, probably not going to bother me.
At this point, you're not even the scariest ghost I've seen today. So, you know. So yeah, I do think that your point about maybe it's a little overused is one at least worth considering.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take fear out of the game. I do think that it's got its places. I know a lot of, you know, having characters who can do various fear effects is kind of fun. One of my favorite things I used to do, and I don't know if this still works, but it was great when it did. Intimidating Shout used to basically, you'd charge something, you'd hit it with Intimidating Shout. The thing you hit with Intimidating Shout would be rooted in place. It wouldn't move. No, yeah. It wouldn't move. The things around it would run away. And usually what would happen is then you'd immediately hit the thing that you were Intimidating Shouting, so it would break fear on that. But everything else would be running around, and you'd just be fighting one guy. But if you were fast enough, you could charge something, hit it with Intimidating Shout, and immediately switch targets to the thing that was running away. And that wouldn't break just because you hit it. That would stay feared for like 8 seconds, which was a ridiculously long amount of time, I freely admit that. But my wife started playing World of Warcraft before I did, and she started playing a hunter. She was like much higher level than me for a long time because I just switched from my paladin to a warrior. But around level, she was like 48 when I finally started catching up. And I was like, I think it was like level 45 or 46. And she used to love to duel me because, you know, she could do a ton of stuff to me at range, and I couldn't do much. And then I figured out this trick where I could charge to her pet, hit Intimidating Shout, and immediately tab over to her and hamstring her. And so while she was running away from me, unable to do anything for 8 seconds, I was hitting her with Mortal Strike and going nuts. And that's how I beat her in the first duel I beat her in. So I have a soft spot for. After my wife kicked my butt like 17 times in a row, it came in and I managed to win one fight. And that's so I have a soft spot for it. But I do think that it needs to be separate from PvP and PvE. Like they are different things at this point, and it does need to be different in them. I'm totally on board with that. But I do think in general, we could see less fear on things that are just not particularly scary at this point.
Yeah.
I definitely think it should be a boss mechanic. I definitely think it should be in the game. I definitely think characters who have it should have it, especially like priests who've done a lot with fear over the years. And warlocks. Didn't warlocks have like a really cool fear thing that's actually a horror mechanic and not even fear?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So don't want to take it away from anybody, but I do think we could see it less on just random McBear or random Ghost Bear or what have you. Ghost Bear. You don't want to fight Ghost Bear.
No. But yeah, I'm in the same camp, but hopefully that answers your question. We're not totally against it, but we're not also totally for it. We're in that happy medium space. But our next set of questions, and there are two questions here, come from Astrea, who's a Blood Elf Paladin from Agra on EU. So question number one. In some episodes, you said the Jailer had interest in Helya because of her ability to create planes. I know the scale is different, but doesn't Wamsamdi have the same ability within the Shadowlands? Trick question, because we don't know. The best and worst thing about Wamsamdi is we still actually have no idea what his power actually is.
He has a plane. He has the other side, but we don't know how that works.
And we don't know if that was his to begin with. We don't know because when we go there, he's Moizala's there.
And Moizala is the one who got him to be a Loa in the first place.
Is it Moizala's place that he's just taking?
Yeah, because we do take it over for him against Moizala. The implication is definitely that Moizala was in charge of it. He was the one controlling it while you were running around trying to save Wamsamdi. So, yeah, there's definitely that aspect to it.
And technically the places we go while we're in the other side are actual physical places that are linked to the other side via whatever the veil is, right? So, like, when you go into, let's say, the Mechagon area, it says Mechagon. It is Mechagon. It's a portion of it separate. When you go and deal with the Ardenweald portion with that broker that's there, it is Ardenweald. You can see the stuff off in the distance. It's a little bit different. So I don't know what the extent of his power actually is. And he makes a very concerted effort to hide that. He doesn't want people to know what his power truly is or what he's truly capable. But he is definitely capable of more than we see. Whether or not he can create entire planes of existence is a whole other thing. We know that he can bridge the gap between worlds. We saw that in Battle for Azeroth. We saw that here in Shadowlands when we started doing that whole questing. If you did Ardenweald and did any of those sort of questing items before that led up to the other side. And that seems to be what he's able to do, at least up front, is just kind of make that barrier between locations, create a tunnel, more or less. So I don't know if he can actually make anything bigger than that.
It should also be pointed out that we don't actually know the extent of Helya's power.
It's true.
We know that she was involved in creating the elemental planes that imprisoned the elemental lords. We don't know exactly how she did it or what the mechanism was. Those planes seem more like outpockets. They seem like they're connected to, for lack of a better word, the prime material plane. I'm calling it that because D&D has a word for it and WoW doesn't.
Yeah, so we're just going to adopt it because it makes verbiage.
Yeah, but those planes seem to be connected to it and just separate from it. They're like, it's kind of like if you decided to build an expansion onto your house. It's not the same as building the house. You're just adding something onto it. That could be the extent of her ability. Or it could be, you know, she worked with Highfather Ra, Raden, to do it. So how much of it was him versus how much of it was her? That's another thing we don't know. She's not a watcher.
And I mean,
she's a Titanforged who was, you know, she worked directly for Odin, and Odin thought of her as a daughter, but she's not on the same, she wasn't originally on the same level as Odin.
Yeah, and don't forget, she was trapped as well, not just Odin. Like, if she had the ability to create a pocket dimension and just trap Odin, she would have done that, but she was also trapped for a while. We inadvertently freed her, right? Like, when we killed her, we set her free.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of, that was a whole big thing. Like, her followers were trying to get her out of that little pocket dimension. So, it's...
Yeah.
What the extent of her power is also in question.
Yeah, it's up in the air. We know she has some, like, she still has some expertise that he might want and value. Plus, I'm pretty sure that the entire bit with the eye was to drive a wedge between Odin and Helya in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they definitely wanted to corrupt that relationship. The Jailer's been up to this stuff for a long time, and we're still following in the dots. One of the things that occurred to me the other day when I was thinking about this was, Joe had mentioned, and this is a big segue, so we're going to cut it, try to keep it short. Joe had mentioned that the Jailer's new look kind of combines elements. It looks kind of drusty. He's got like a chest plate that looks like the Drust do when you see them in Ardenweald. It also kind of looks like the Ardenweald armor set, which, mm-hmm. you know, if Zoval, the Jailer, was originally involved in the whole Shadowlands as one big thing, makes sense that he would combine elements of other groups, right? Maybe the reason the Drust are the way they are is they made a pact with him. Maybe that's how they created Thros.
Because it would make sense if that's what he did with Helya, right?
Yeah, if it's Helya taught them how to create Thros, and they created Thros as their own weird, abominable land of the dead, where they sent themselves instead of to the Shadowlands. He'd know how to do that. And also it might mean that the whole deal, the whole pact with Odin in the first place, was to set that up, because the Drust are Vrykul. They're a group of Vrykul who separated away when the shattering, the original sundering happened. You know, they're exiles, but they are Vrykul.
Mm-hmm.
And so by having Odin's eye, he would have a way to influence them. He would have a connection to them. Yeah, I there's a lot of possibilities here. We don't know what Helya's limits are. We don't know what, we know Muzala was working for the Jailer. So if Muzala created the other side, that might be how he did it. He might have actually done it using Helya's knowledge. You know, this is all still up in the air. There's a lot more we could possibly learn in the future about all of it.
And I think we will, too. And I think that's one of the most important things that we should mention. Helya has not been resolved at all. We've dealt with her twice in storyline, as far as what's happened so far in Shadowlands. We haven't dealt with her since. Her story is still yet to be fully revealed to us. We have everything that just happened with the Jailer, so more stuff is going to come out about that. So it's going to be fascinating to learn more about their process, especially, and again, if you didn't listen to our last Lore Watch, please go back and do so. Shameless self-promotion. But we talked about there's still more story to tell. And we're in an interesting position where now we can start getting some of the inner workings of whatever plan was revealed to Sylvanas. And this is information we didn't have before, but we are working on getting, that's going to fill in some gaps and possibly fuel some very wild speculation from us here. But there's going to be some really interesting things to come regarding Helya, and I think Bwamsamdi still, because I don't think he's done yet, the Drust as well, and the whole idea of creating pocket dimensions. Because again, don't forget, Korthia and the Shadowlands itself is basically just one big collection of pocket dimensions. Like, mm-hmm. the four zones we go to, Korthia getting pulled into the Maw, these are all like little pocket dimensions that are getting, like, they exist in their own little bubble, but can still touch or be connected to the other ones in some manner. So things... layers upon layers upon layers here. But I think we'll move on to your second question, because you do have another one here. So question number two from Estrella. What races from the D&D settings missing in the Warcraft lore you think could easily fit the setting? Choose one for Alliance, Horde, and one for generic monster type. For me, it would be interesting a Warforged-like race, as both Horde and Alliance, being constructed by gnomes or the goblins, after studying the techniques the Keepers use to create the Titanforge in the Halls of Stone and the Halls of Lightning. What do you think, Matt?
I got to go first.
I've been going first on most of these. It's your turn.
Yeah, I like that Warforged idea, but since you used it, I can't. So I have actually fought for a very long time now that the Dragonkin, not the Dragonkin.
Dragonborn.
Dragonborn, thank you.
You're welcome.
The Dragonborn or the Draconians, since they seem to be using the Kryn guys as like proto-Dragonborn, would be an interesting thing to bring in. WoW has them, kind of. WoW has, you know, a group of Draconian types, and it would be interesting if they then, you know, a playable version that wasn't as big, and it wasn't like the Centaurian ones that kind of have like a, you know, four legs and two arms. If they just brought in like a straight up playable Dragonborn type race for the Horde, that would be kind of cool. For the Alliance, it's kind of weird because Draenei are basically Tieflings and Asimar at the same time.
Yeah, they are.
They're like their Asimar and their attitudes and their connection to like holiness and so forth, but they look like tieflings. Hooves, horns, you know, the whole deal. They look tieflingy. And you could make that more prevalent if you actually let the Eredar be playable. Like if you actually brought in playable Eredar for like one of the factions. The problem with that is I don't know who'd take them.
Yeah, I mean they kind of mess up our stuff.
Yeah, the Horde, the orcs would definitely be like, no. You know, everyone says like, oh, the Horde should get Eredar. I'm like, yeah, I can't imagine orcs ever being okay with that. The orcs would be like, F that. You know what they did to us? No. So I'm not sure on that one, but it is one of those things. I can imagine a pocket of Eredar who were like, yeah, okay, the whole demon thing was a mistake. Joining the Alliance, of all things. I could see the Alliance actually letting that happen if, like, say, Velen came forth.
I was just going to say, yeah, chance. I could see Velen going, if they're really repenting, we should give them a chance, blah, blah, blah. Like, I could see him doing that because that's totally Velen style, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe do it that way. But again, that's not something that's entirely new to WoW. WoW has a lot of stuff that, if you actually stop and look at D&D, lines up pretty well. Like, you can find... There are constructs in WoW that you could use as Warforge, for example. You yourself mentioned the we've seen lots of constructs in WoW that could be along those lines. You absolutely could do that. So it's interesting. It's hard. I was going to say maybe Leonin, and then I'm like, oh no, we've got Sabron.
We do have Sabron. Yep.
Yeah. So I mean, if your thing is that we just don't have it as a playable race right now, there's a ton of options, but. If you're saying specifically this thing is not in WoW at all, I have a harder time coming up with anything.
So I have one, actually, and I think this is potentially interesting. One of the things that I've been thinking about a lot recently with the Shadowlands, the nature of it, and how everything works, and the idea of spirit, but also the idea of elementals, is what would happen if we had basically Genasi? You had what would happen if a mortal and an elemental paired. We have precedent for it already, where, I mean, quasi, an immortal being, but still, you know, existing on the plane of flesh, and an elemental had children. But what if we took that a step further? What if there were Genasi? What if the elements, you know, because they're comprised of the same sort of, for lack of a better term, anima spirit that we are, could commingle, could have children out there that had, you know, natural predisposition for, you know, earth, water, air, and fire? I think that would be really cool. And I think that could be very interesting. And you could have them be human, and you could have them be, you know, any various sort of like physical appearance that you want, but have them have sort of like that elemental kin to, and have them have something that draws upon that element. And I think that would be really neat because, again, the elementals exist. They're technically existed on this planet before we did. And we're kind of constructed ultimately from the planet, so maybe having some sort of intermixing between that, and then you could have that exist on both factions, because it wouldn't really necessarily have to be their alliance or Horde, because the alliance and the Horde at this point now have interactions with elementals across the board. Some of them just seem to be more predisposed to have interactions with certain ones. Fire and Earth tend to be more Horde oriented. That seems to be something that they've had much more interaction with.
You know what I'm thinking of, though?
Go ahead.
You just made me think of this. We kind of do have it already. The Yongol have Yongol who've somehow become fire.
Uh-huh.
So you could have it be not necessarily, you don't have to have been born to a union of an elemental and
but they've adopted it into them or something.
Perhaps there's a way you could just, you know, like you just said, you'd have it, like, it could be something that it could be inborn, or maybe it's something you can learn or what have you. I don't know. But, or maybe you could, like, maybe it's something where you go to the elemental plane and get exposed enough, you become part infused with the element. I don't know.
Gamma radiation, man. It solves everything.
It just makes me think that you could have it be something where you could actually have it be kind of a class thing. Elemental class that does that. And that way you could have it be Horde and Alliance. It's just a class. Like, instead of the rune, like, they wanted to have the rune one for a long time. Not the rune priest. I don't remember what they were calling it. But instead of that, But instead of that, you could actually have it be like the elemental infused or something, you know, just the infused, and they're living elementals. So they instead of like the way the shamans do, where they command and converse with elementals and make deals with them, these guys just bring it into their body. They're sort of like physical adepts from Shadowrun.
Yeah.
That's interesting. This has, we do this all the time.
But yeah, no, Astrea, thank you for those questions. I think we should, I kind of want to revisit question two in long format. I'm not going to lie.
Maybe it's important. Yeah.
But I think we're going to move on to our next one, which is from our good, very large lizard man, Godzilla. Question for Lore Watch or Blizzard Watch. I feel like I have to play Thrall's advocate on this because it feels like people are once again unfairly blaming Thrall for Garrosh's actions. Yes, Thrall chose him to be the war chief, but Thrall never told him to mana bomb Theramore or get juiced up on Yashiraj Mojo, etc. Thrall was 100% factful when he told Garrosh that he, Garrosh, made his own choices. And the cinematic in 9.1 hammers at home. Garrosh said those were his choices. Yes, Thrall should feel some guilt, but at the same time, Garrosh made his own choices. If we blame Thrall for Garrosh, then we pretty much have to blame the jailer for Sylvanas. Yet everyone is saying Sylvanas has to face her choices and no one is blaming the jailer. So yes, I am miffed that I don't get to see Thrall smack Garrosh around one last time and reinforce that Garrosh chose his own fate. Thrall put him on a path, but Garrosh chose which path to follow. Which forks in the road to take. I'm going to say I partially agree and partially disagree. So the reason that a lot of people, at least in my case, blame Thrall for a lot of what happened to Garrosh is because he left Garrosh. He left him thinking that everything was going to be okay. Knowing who Garrosh was and knowing what he was setting down on that path, I think is the problem. Because if you look at it, their interactions, Garrosh, even while Thrall was around, respected other orcs more than anything else. So when Thrall leaves and says, oh, Bane will handle it, it's fine. Yeah, that's bad. And that is what we sort of blame him for. Sticking around and seeing how he would have done things and maybe offering guidance and standing up and saying, stop this. As an orc, Garrosh would have been more likely to listen. Yes, he is ultimately responsible for his own actions. Yes, he thinks what he did was right. And yes, he thinks he made the best choices at the time. But he's not the only one to blame for what happened because he made the best choices with what information he had. And yes, he absolutely should be held accountable for mana bombing Theramore and deciding that getting juiced up on Yashiraj is okay, but Thrall also shouldn't be completely absolved of that because he didn't stick around long enough to give him proper guidance. He never actually set him up. He said, all right, cool, I'm going to go have a family now. By the way, you're running the Horde. Peace. And then left, and thinking that everybody else that he left behind was going to take care of it for him. That's the problem with Thrall. And with the Sylvanas thing, maybe an unpopular opinion, but I think she got fleeced. I'm not saying that she's not responsible for what she did, but there is an element of she got lied to and manipulated. And yeah, but I'm not going to blame her for getting manipulated because, well, she got manipulated. Yeah, it's something that she wanted. She was blind to some of the stuff that was going on. She still made terrible choices. She should still have to seek whatever sort of resolution is for the things that she chose to do. But again, that doesn't absolve the jailer. The jailer is a maniacal maniac who definitely contributed to a lot of death that occurred. And again, it's just one of those things. It's Thrall's not completely absolved of everything that happened. The jailer's not completely absolved of everything that happened, but neither is Garrosh, and certainly not Sylvanas. What do you think, Matt?
There's an old saying that I'm stealing from Dune, where it's like, if a subordinate creates a problem, it is the fault of those in authority for not anticipating the problem. I don't know that I totally agree with it, but I think it's worth considering in the case of Thrall. I don't think anyone is saying Thrall is wholly responsible for anything that Garrosh did. It is very clear that Garrosh did things Thrall would not approve.
Oh, of course.
But Thrall does bear some responsibility for putting him in power, not just because people like Bane told him not to, but because Thrall himself is the guy who went to Nagrand in the first place, found a Garrosh who was utterly tortured by the sins of his father, who was afraid he too would be corrupt like that he couldn't be trusted, that he couldn't lead his own people. And Thrall was like, No, your dad was a hero. He saved us. And that, it was true as far as it went, but he didn't ever stop to help Garrosh get the nuance of it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, your dad was a hero. It was, your dad did do those things. He did damn our people, but then he gave his life to save us. He made right what he once made wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he paid the price for his actions. If that had been the lesson that Thrall taught Garrosh, I think Garrosh would have come out of it a different person. And I'm not saying Thrall is necessarily supposed to be the guy who teaches everybody everything, but he was the shaman. A shaman is the spiritual leader of the people. Garrosh was just, you know, somebody who's really good with an axe.
Garrosh was a general, not a shaman.
Yeah, and wasn't even a general at that point. He hadn't been put in command of any forces. He'd barely led a tribe, and he'd led it poorly because he didn't believe he was worthy of anything.
Oh, yeah, the Northrend assault that he led, right?
That's after. I'm talking, you meet him in Negrand. This is a broken person.
Yep, fair,
this is somebody.
Fair.
This is somebody who does not have any confidence in himself. And instead of coming along and saying, "Look, yes, your dad made mistakes, but and there's stuff to admire too. You have in you that ability." He's just like, "No, your dad was the greatest. Here it is. Here's an image of him totally kicking Manoroth's butt. You've got it wrong. He was the greatest." And I'm sorry, Grom Hellscream was a monster who did awful things. Mm-hmm. And he was a hero who did good things. He was complicated, and Thrall didn't teach him that complication because Thrall himself is very young and wasn't raised among orcs. It's like the things we are quote unquote blaming Thrall for are in turn not entirely Thrall's fault. Thrall does not actually understand how the orcs of Negrand think because he wasn't raised among them. He didn't live there. He didn't live it. And so he wants to be, you know, he wanted to connect with his orcish heritage, and he went forth and tried to find it, and he absolutely became the leader of his people, but he did so at a remove. They had to teach him orcish when he found them. He didn't speak it. You know, there's a lot to Thrall. It's just as there's a lot to Garrosh, there's a lot to Grom. These are complicated people.
But I mean, and when I say...
And that's... just what I'm saying is, it's not as simple as Thrall is wholly responsible for Garrosh, and I know you didn't say that.
That's what I'm just going on.
Yeah, you absolutely didn't say that, and I'm not saying that you did. Thrall is not wholly responsible for Garrosh's actions. Absolutely not. Does he bear some responsibility for them? Absolutely he does. And he himself would be the first to tell you that. He says as much to Jaina when the two of them are standing outside Thunder Bluff in Battle for Azeroth. He's like, "Sometimes I feel like everything I did, you know, it all went wrong. You know, Garrosh, Bane, so many things I wish I could have done differently." It's not that he's not kicking himself and saying, "Woe is me, I'm always wrong," but he is at the same time saying, "You know, I do bear responsibility for this. I'm responsible for my choices, just like Garrosh was responsible for his." And is it true that Garrosh is responsible for his choices? Absolutely. How many times did people try to offer him another path? Bane tried to talk him down. Then Bane tried to, you know, talk to him in the only language he knew how to talk to him in, and would have won if not for the poison on Gorhal. Bane would have kicked Garrosh's butt. He was winning that fight.
Yeah, and that's the distinction that I don't think I was articulating properly, is just that, again, these individual characters are responsible for the actions that they took. That doesn't mean that the scenario that they were put in was entirely their choice or fault.
But at the same time, however, I do have to go into one of the differences between Garrosh and Sylvanas in this situation.
Oh, there's a huge difference, yes.
Well, there's a lot of huge differences. One of them is that this, right or wrong, Garrosh didn't delude himself.
No, he knew what he was doing was awful.
Yeah, and he didn't think it was awful because to him it would only be awful if it was happening to the people he cared about. Garrosh was tribal. Because he was a Negrand orc who'd never been raised any other way. Thrall is cosmopolitan. He sees all orcs and therefore kind of all people. Like the entire horde he saw as his responsibility, his to protect, his to care for. Garrosh much less strongly felt that. Garrosh was tribal by nature. He, you know, in that way that the orcs were. Like there's some places that are completely different. Their tribalism is not inherently bad. It's just the way he took it. And the difference here is that Garrosh never misled himself or deluded himself. I think Sylvanas did, because nobody is smart enough to manipulate Sylvanas Windrunner if Sylvanas doesn't want to be manipulated. Sylvanas is a incredibly cunning, tactical genius. She's got a blind spot. She has the blind spot that allowed Draconda here to manipulate her people and effectively get around her. She never stopped to think that one of their own might betray her. And this time, she wanted to believe that he would fix everything she thinks is wrong in existence. She wanted to believe that the jailer would forge a new fair universe where things that were like what happened to her wouldn't happen. Because what happened to her was monstrously unfair. And you cannot dispute that. What she went through was unfair. Garrosh, nothing that happened to Garrosh was unfair.
Mm-hmm.
but everything that Sylvanas went through before her death was unfair from the beginning. And she's right. And she says that, you know, that these things, this is existence. This is the way life is. It's all just gone. And you're this thing now. And all that's all true. Sylvanas' anger is coming from a real place. So does that mean I think Sylvanas is not responsible for her actions? Oh, heck no.
No, she definitely is.
And not only that, I think she's even more responsible than Garrosh is, because unlike Garrosh, she got there because she let someone lie to her, knowing nobody should have believed anything he said. It brings me back to, of all things, Dragon Age 2. There's a part where your party goes to the Fade and a demon offers one of your party members, Meryl, a deal, and she takes it. And afterwards, she's even like, I knew not to trust him. I don't know why I did. But the truth was, she did because she wanted to. Mm-hmm. She wanted what he was saying and wanted it so badly that it didn't matter that she knew it was a lie, because the very chance that it might not be a lie was all she needed to delude herself. That, to me, is Sylvanas right now.
That's basically what I was going to say. You said it a lot more eloquently than I did, so thank you.
Yeah, and so there's a difference. I think they're both responsible for their actions. I think Garrosh's responsibility is more so that he's continuously refused any offer to mend his ways, to learn from his mistakes, to do things differently. No, when presented with a chance in the afterlife to repent of his actions, he straight says, I'd do it all again. When Kael'thas Sunstrider is more reasonable about his faults and failings as a person than you are, you're off the page, man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Garrosh's problem. Sylvanas's problem is that she deliberately closed her eyes to what was happening, no matter how many times people told her what was happening. And she knew it was happening. You could see in every little sidelong glance she gave him.
Yeah,
every
she knew.
Time she knew, wait, this isn't right. But she was like, no, we're going. It's the sunk cost fallacy in action. It's I've gone too far. We have to go through with this. One of the things that you have to keep in mind with any decision you make in your life is this. If you can't abort it, then you should never have taken it. If you can't stop in the middle of a decision and say, wait, this was a mistake, you're in trouble. There's an old saying in Spycraft, you can always walk away. You can always walk away from an op. If you're doing a mission and things get dicey, you can always walk away. Because if you can't walk away, you messed up. There has to always be an escape. There's always the ability to go, I now have new information. Things are different. I can change tack. And you even see that Sylvanas finally does when it's too late. And that's, I think, the tragedy here is that Sylvanas, well, maybe it's too late. Maybe it's not. We'll see. That's one of the things I think is really fascinating about this, that we will see what Sylvanas does with what's going on.
And how she's going to change, too, because of the scenario. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The situation she's in is now wildly different than it was at the start of her journey. Like,
yes,
going
absolutely.
Back to Cataclysm. Like, this has been a long, slow descent. And
and also, I mean, Garrosh never had... There is that fact that Sylvanas was murdered by a weapon that literally tears your soul into pieces and was raised from the dead with it and thus not fully returned. So Garrosh never had that. Garrosh was taking his actions with there's no wound or illness coloring his judgment. Sylvanas couldn't see the world the way it actually was. That doesn't make anything she did right. It doesn't mean she's not responsible for her actions, because there's plenty of Forsaken out there and they're not all destroying the world. So yeah, no, I definitely think there's responsibility to be had, but I definitely think they're different cases and they should be handled differently.
I'd agree. And I think that is the most eloquent way to say it. All right, so I think we can move on to the next one, unless there is anything else you want to say about that.
I think I got it.
I think you did too, and thank you for that. This one comes from Winterfell, a Worgen Frost Death Knight. Hi, Watchers. I was listening to the podcast where you discussed the Night Warrior and Night Elf Paladins, and it made me wonder if a new round of race class combinations could be unlocked through questing. We already have unlockable content in the game. Demon Hunters and Death Knights used to have to be unlocked. There are still 10 allied races that need to be unlocked before they can be played, and as you mentioned, at least one cosmetic option, the Night Warrior Eyes, is unlockable. Assuming that Blizzard does not simply abolish race class restrictions, do you think it would be going too far to put a set of race class combinations behind a questline? Or should there just be an optional questline explaining it, like the Tahu Aponi conversation of the Tyrande/Highborn conversation back in Wrath? And another lore-related note, what exactly is the status of the Night Elves and Worgen within the Alliance? I know that there's no way any playable race is going to leave or change the faction. From a lore point of view, are they still in the Alliance? Are they considered leaving, or is there just a temporary chill in the relationship? I'll start with the second one, because I think it's easier than the first one first. So they're still in the Alliance, kind of. I mean, the Worgen definitely are. Technically, Gen is leading things in the with the assistance of Tyrallian and the rest of what's left of the Alliance that's sticking around in the absence of Anduin, or at least that's what it's being portrayed as. They're still there. And if anything, Gen has gotten a little more less standoffish as far as how that goes.
I gotta say, I love that you expressed it a little more less standoffish.
I couldn't think of the best word for it.
I mean, that's actually, because no, it fits, because it is, he isn't a little less standoffish. He's a little more less standoffish. He's still pretty standoffish.
Yeah, it's just different little tiny baby degrees, right?
Yeah. It's like he put his toe in.
Yeah.
And then immediately was like, Tyrallian, you're going to handle all this, right? Yeah, okay, I'm going to go back to being me. I'm going to brood in the corner and tell you you're doing everything wrong.
Yep.
I do want to say that I think the Night Elves are definitely still in the Alliance, in part because Tyrande has been too focused on other things to do anything else.
Yep.
Like, she's doing the whole Shadowlands thing. She's very focused on the hunt for Sylvanas. Whether or not she would take them out is an open question. I don't think she would unless she felt she couldn't get what she wanted while being in the Alliance. If that were the case, though, yeah, I think she'd yank them out.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But I also think that the Tyrande we've been seeing lately, I don't know, I don't think that's going to be the Tyrande who comes out of Shadowlands.
No.
But the Tyrande we've got right now is almost more likely to simply behead Anduin and seize power. And if anybody got in her way, kill them too.
I would love to see, like, I'm not going to lie, like, a standoff between her with the Night Warrior power and Gen Greymane, I'd be so on board for that.
I don't know if the Gen would last very long, quite frankly.
I know, and I think he needs that. I would love to see him have that sobering reality.
I can't stop her, you know, like, it would be an interesting thing. But I do think that the Tyrande we see coming out of this is going to be different. I don't know if she'll still be in charge. I don't know if Chandris is going to step in. I don't know. I think Chandris should. I also think that Chandris and Maiev should go out because it would drive Jared absolutely crazy. That would be great. But anyway, I do think that the Night Elves are in for some change. I don't know how much of it we're going to get to see, because the problem with World of Warcraft is, by its very nature, we're kind of always off to some new place and we don't get a lot of time to focus on stuff like this. Battle for Azeroth was kind of unique in that it spent a lot of time dealing with, like, the current state of affairs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it, I don't
definitely
know
an abnormality, get, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how much of that we're going to get to see in the future, but I definitely think that the Night Elf position in the Alliance is definitely one, ironically, I'd say their position is stronger now.
I would agree. I was going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, because A, they're up in Hyjal, where they're right there.
They
on
literally
Galador.
They also literally have the high ground.
Yeah. But more importantly, it's like the thing they went through, the trauma, has crystallized them as a people in a way they haven't been in a very long time. They've sort of remembered, oh, we're incredibly good warriors. Because it took the whole Horde to push up to Tel Drossel against mostly just the Night Elves. And afterward, when the Forsaken were trying to hold it, they failed. They got pushed out. The Night Elves, again, pretty much by themselves, with some help from some allies, but certainly not the Alliance, that the Alliance forces did not come. It was mostly just the Night Elves, pushed the Forsaken out of Darkshore and retook it. And they basically hold everything they once held again, plus Hyjal, plus they are now totally focused on, you know, they don't, none of the diffidence is there anymore.
And
meanwhile, the Alliance has also had to face up to the fact that the Night Elves not only don't really feel like they need the Alliance, they feel like they can, if the Alliance tells them something, they're like, we decide if we're going to follow you. We decide what we do.
And
if we don't like it, we'll do what we want to do.
That's a return to force, too, for the Night Elves from the time that they were introduced in Warcraft 3, right? Like, that was sort of the whole thing. They were the unseen army that had this complete control over the battlefield. That was how they were introduced. They were introduced as this powerhouse, not an alliance. They were their own thing. They were their own faction.
Yeah, these were not stand-up. They weren't stand-up fighters. Like, a Night Elf against an Orc, they can have a fight, But that's not the Night Elf way of fighting. The Night Elves don't fight like, let's bring an entire army and just go toe-to-toe. No, the Night Elves are like, let's let them walk past us thinking they're safe and assassinate them from the darkness. It's actually a very good matchup with the Forsaken. That's one of the things I thought was that's actually really inspired to have the Night Elves and the Forsaken, because each in their own way is like a creature of the night. They're a creature of darkness and shadow. Differently, the Night Elves are all about the natural version of it, and the Forsaken are the unnatural version of it, but it's still basically the same thing. It's two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm going to be most fascinated to see what happens with the Night Elves as far as going forward. I'm very invested to see what happens with them in their relation to the Alliance as a whole.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that this isn't really part of this question, so I don't think we should go into it too much, but I also think there's a lot to be done with the Forsaken after Shadowlands, and that's one of the things I would like to see. I would like it if the next expansion did deal with the Alliance and the Horde and their current status quo. Not necessarily making them fight again. I don't necessarily want to see that again, but I would like to see, okay, how does the Horde as a council work? How is it incorporated, this things? What have they done with the Forsaken refugees? What's going on there? And stuff like that. And for that matter, I'd like to see the Alliance. What are the Night Elves doing? There's just a ton of stuff we could get to see, and I would like to see it.
Yeah. Now, the first part of your question, which I want to get back to, is having unlockable class race combinations. I'm not opposed to that idea. And honestly, that might be something that does get introduced if they do give us something like Night Elf Paladins, and it's something I think would make sense for certain combinations therein. If we're not going to get more allied races anytime soon, if we're not going to get another class anytime soon, having something that gives you sort of that this is how it unlocks, this is how it happens, is not a bad thing, especially if we go with the idea of the Night Warrior's power being divided out to Night Elf Paladins. That could be a really cool unlock. That could be a really cool event and something that, you know, players could experience. Now, I understand that that's generally not how race class combinations have worked in the past for World of Warcraft, but it would be interesting, even if it's just a scenario that you run through, to give you that option as something that you can do. And then make it account wide. If you've done it once, you just have it available for everybody. But I could see something like that being a really cool introduction to some of those new class race combinations. Like, there's this whole thing where people keep asking for Vulpera to become druids, because Vulpera can't be druids. So having something where they discover druidity would not be a terrible thing. It could actually be a whole ton of fun with how they approach it and how they deal with it. It's the same thing with, like, goblins becoming shaman. I would have loved to have seen how that conversation went down. Like, we know that they sort of, like, treat it like a transaction, like a business deal, but how did they get there? I would have loved to have seen that story uncover in real time. And maybe that's just me being a little bit selfish about it, but I think those are really cool things. Those are really neat things. And we did kind of get a little bit about that when, you know, we got Torn Paladin, but it wasn't necessarily like a quest to unlock him. We just got to see how the story unfolded. So yeah, I'd be fine with that. I'd be fine with something that would allow that. What do you think, Matt?
I'm just going to be upfront with what I want. And I don't, this is not me saying this will happen. I'm not predicting this, but I want them to drop class race restrictions entirely, because I think they're dumb. I just don't get it. It's like, sure, maybe almost no Tauren would become rogues, but there's got to be one skinny Tauren who wants to sneak around.
Hey, we know one of those. We know one of those. Hi, Caddy.
So yeah, that straight up front, that's my first thing. Secondly, a lot of MMOs have different ways of approaching the concept of class. The Final Fantasy one has jobs, and they basically have borrowed that from the single player Final Fantasy games, where you could basically, the one that really was, of all things, 10-2, in my opinion, had one of the best systems for this, where you could just basically be anything. Like, you could play this character as a melee combatant or a spellcaster or a healer or whatever you wanted. I would love it if, say, like, I'm on my Tauren warrior right now, who I really like, and I haven't played him in a long time, and I've been feeling really morose about that, so I got on him today for the stream. And I'm thinking about leveling him, I just don't have a home Horde side, so I don't know what I would do. It would be kind of hard to grind all the way to 60 and then do everything alone. That would kind of bum me out, so I don't know. But I keep thinking about, what if I could, like, we used to have the thing where we would go to the trainer and spend some money and switch our spec. And then they just made it you could be whatever spec you wanted at any time. And that's great and all, But imagine if you could go to the trainer and spend some gold, and now you're a paladin. And when you were done with that, or you didn't want to be playing a paladin right now, you could go to the trainer and spend some gold, and now you're a death knight. And maybe it's restricted to armor type. So you could, paladins, warriors, and death knights could switch between them. Shaman and hunters, the various leather classes. I don't know. You know, lots of ways it could go. But I'd love to see some variation on that, where you're not limited to one class on one character.
Yeah. And because we talked about it, because the job system is so, it makes it so much more easy and inviting to try things, right?
Yeah, and it's one of those situations where I get why you might not want to do that. I do. I understand it. And I, like I said, I don't expect this. But I do think that, at the very least, make it so you can be a Draenei Warlock. I personally think the concept of a Draenei Warlock is abhorrent. I would never play one, ever.
But somebody would.
There's got to be some Draenei out there who's like, you know, heck, all those Eredar Warlocks were once basically Draenei. Like, the Draenei were, and the Eredar were the same people. It's got to be, you know, we see in Warlords of Draenor, we see a Draenei become a warlock. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, yeah, I feel like it's got to be something. Like, just have it. Like, just let people play whatever they want. If Dungeons & Dragons could come around to it after, like, you know, 30, 40, 50 years of not letting it happen, then World of Warcraft can.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, like, that would be what I would absolutely love. That would be the gold standard, right? Like, that would be, I think that's how it should have been. We've talked about it before, right?
Absolutely, and I know that you feel that way.
But I just want to make it clear. I want to make it clear for the listeners that maybe not normally listen to us that I'm not against that. I just think that I like the idea of developing story for how things happen like that.
Sure, I would love it if, like, at the end of an expansion, perhaps, you'd have a whole thing where, you know, the cosmos has changed and, you know, now new passive power are open to people or something. Go for it. Do that. You know, after the Shadowlands thing, you know, we stop the jailer and prevent the universe from being destroyed. But in the process, the universe is reconfigured. You know, it's Crisis on Infinite Earths. I don't care. Just let me have this.
And honestly, I'd be super into it. So, I mean, I want that to happen too, because I do think that class restrictions are goofy, but I know some of them exist for some reasons, right? Way back when, and I'm not going to believe, you know, take this out too long because I know we're coming up on time, but druids all had the same form. Right, with the exception of horde druids had horns and maybe a beard.
Yeah, because there were only two. There were only two druid classes, and the horde druid and night elf druids were always different. Like, they had different cat forms. It wasn't just that the horde ones had horns. The horde ones were lions, and the night elf ones were like panthery types.
Yeah,
but yeah, as we've gotten more druids, each druid has come in with a story, and that's been pretty cool. I really like the ones we got for trolls, where like, you know, there's a story element to it. I totally get where you're going with that.
Yeah, and just to make it clear for everybody else, I don't even know Matt gets in, I'm sure you guys do as well, is that there's art assets that are associated with it. So, like, having a Volpera one, do you just recycle something that's already out there, or do they get their own foxy version of druid forms? And it's the same thing for all those other ones. What do you do for mechanome druids?
Just shrink the warden.
But I mean, or worgen druids or things like that. Like, there is some of that to consider. And
worgen druids, man, I don't know. Have you played a worgen druid?
I have not.
Dog, cat, and dog, bear are fantastically amusing to me. It's like, it's just something about this wolfy looking dog, cat thing. It's like, what's going on?
But it's just, some of that is restricted by that, right?
Oh, yeah, I think absolutely.
Druids are the roadblock for that, I think, for the most part. And then shamans would have to have art assets for their totems.
Yeah, and paladins need to get, like, special mounts and stuff. Yeah, I get where you're going. I understand why there are reasons that we can't just throw it all open at once.
But there's nothing that says we can't work towards it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that it would be cool if we got new race class combinations, if there was a quest for it. I always felt a little weird that there wasn't a quest for when Blood Elves got warriors. Because they were the only holdouts. They were the only ones who didn't get warriors. And then suddenly one day it was like, some Blood Elf was like, you know what? I'm tired of studying the Holy Light. I'm just going to hit things with an axe. It's simpler. And then, like, a whole bunch of us were like, yeah, let's just hit things with an axe. I don't want to learn anything. It's like, they're like, if you think about Blood Elf warriors, the biggest rebels in Blood Elf society, because they've rejected the entire arcane tradition, and then they didn't pick up anything else to compensate for it. They just, like, we're gonna lift weights, we're just gonna get swole. They didn't get swole, but they still hit things.
Yeah, it's true. I had no lies detected. But I think that's going to do it for us, because I think we are at time. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, or an ad-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. And thank you guys for being here with us and putting up with some technical limitations and all that stuff. We love doing the show because we love doing a show with you guys. If you have a question for the show, send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com, the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for the show, or hit us up on the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel on Discord, or the Q Questions channel on Discord. Or you can just directly add us on Discord or even Twitter, or I don't know, you know, beam it to me telepathically if you can do that. But quite frankly, maybe don't, because I don't want to be like, oh God, I'm going crazy. No, it's just questions for the show. That wouldn't. Thank you guys, though, for everyone, for being here with us. This has been the Blizzard Watch Podcast, and we'll be back next week. Just hit things.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.